What's behind Britain's plan to send asylum seekers to Rwanda? The government says it's needed to deter undocumented migrants. Cruel and inhumane is how rights groups see it. So, will the agreement work? And can the rights of migrants be protected? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Mohammed Jamjoum. Being smuggled from France to Britain by boat could earn you a one-way ticket to Rwanda. That's the British government's message to undocumented migrants making the dangerous voyage across the English Channel. An agreement between Britain and Rwanda means that single men will be flown to Africa to have their asylum claims processed there. If they're found to be genuine refugees, there will be no guarantee of settlement in the UK. Prime Minister Boris Johnson says action is needed to stop what he calls vile people smugglers turning the channel into a watery graveyard. Rights groups condemn the deal as cruel, expensive, and illegal under international law. Nadine Baba reports.
On the white cliffs of Dover, looking out across the English Channel, which separates Britain from France, 600 people crossed this narrow stretch of water by boat on Wednesday. Not a huge figure in the scheme of things, but under pressure, Boris Johnson is determined to be seen to be doing something to stop the dangerous journeys.
It's a busy shipping line. It is a busy shipping line.
And so, more than 6,000 kilometres away in Kigali, his Home Secretary announced an ambitious deal with the Rwandan government. In theory, anyone who enters the UK via a so-called illegal route may be sent to Rwanda to have their claim for asylum processed.
Those who are resettled will be given the support, including up to 5 years of training with the help of integration, accommodation, healthcare, so that they can resettle and thrive.
The Rwandan government's getting an initial payment of roughly $156 million. It says it'll offer people protection and a chance to rebuild their life, even if their asylum claim is unsuccessful.
Many Rwandans have experienced what it means to be displaced. This has shaped how we approach migration and asylum. Rwanda already provides a refuge for almost 130,000 refugees from multiple countries, including neighbors like the DRC and Burundi, as well as Afghanistan and migrants evacuated from Libya.
Thank you very much.
Despite the UK's warm words about Rwanda's offer, Boris Johnson says the scheme should act as a deterrent to people thinking of crossing the channel. Whatever the case, he's accepted there will be legal challenges. In many eyes, it's a clear breach of the 1951 United Nations Refugee Convention. Beyond that, opposition politicians and some conservatives from Johnson's own party have called the whole idea immoral, unworkable, and a huge waste of money.
This government needs to create more safe routes. It needs to be looking at creating a humanitarian visa system, for example, where people can claim asylum in a country such as France, in an embassy there, so that they don't have to put their money and their lives in the hands of people smugglers. There are many other options to this issue.
It's far from clear how much this scheme will cost. Beyond practicalities, many have expressed amazement at the choice of Rwanda. Last year, Britain itself called for independent investigations into allegations of extrajudicial killings, deaths in custody, enforced disappearances and torture in the country. And rights groups have drawn parallels with Australia's experience of offshoring asylum seekers, saying sending them to Rwanda will simply increase the risk to their physical and mental health. Nadine Barber, Al Jazeera.
Britain's agreement has been compared to Australia's offshore processing policy. Between 2001 and 2008, and since 2012, people who arrived by boat to Australia were sent to prisons in Nauru and Manus Island in Papua New Guinea. Rights groups say Australia violated its obligations under the UN Refugee Convention. Detainees reported torture, sexual abuse, self-harm, and mental illness. In 2017, the Australian government was ordered to pay $52 million in compensation to nearly 2,000 Manus Island refugees. The policy is expected to cost Australian taxpayers nearly $600 million this year to keep fewer than 230 people in offshore jails. Let's speak to Kolbasia Hausu, the director of survivor empowerment at the organization Freedom from Torture. He has firsthand experience of the UK's asylum process. Kolbasia, thanks so much for joining us today. You had a harrowing journey getting to the UK. What was your experience like arriving in the UK as a refugee and then being placed in detention?
Thank you very much, and also thank you for having me. I think my experience of reaching the UK was traumatic, was horrendous, and was horrible. And I did not have much of a choice, but for me, the most important thing for me is to get somewhere which I feel safe, and I know that I will be protected, and I know that I'm going to start rebuilding my life. And when I got into the UK, I was really shocked by the fact that I was, after presenting myself and saying that I'm here and I want protection, the next thing that happened to me, I was put through detention, immigration detention center. And that was massive, massive shock into my system. And as a result, it has triggered, you know, the trauma of the journey and also the trauma of persecution and war and also torture into me. And I start displaying some symptom of post-trauma disorder. And also I was quite shocked because I was in a process of being returned or deported back, which I felt that I'm going to be deported back again, facing persecution and facing the thing that I just ran away and took a risk, you know, to get as far as possible from it.
Kolbasia, what are your thoughts when it comes to this agreement that's been announced between Britain and Rwanda that could see asylum seekers who arrive in the UK being sent to Rwanda to have their asylum claim processed there? I mean, you just spoke before about the trauma that you encountered being in detention in the UK. Could this be a much more traumatic experience if asylum seekers are deported, if they're taken or if they're sent to Rwanda to be processed there?
Absolutely. I think that's an inhumane plan by the UK government to make a decision, first and foremost, to negate our duty and responsibility to refugees and also the Refugee Convention, which we are signatory to, which we need to uphold, and which the international community respecting us to uphold that. What message are we sending to other people? And secondly, it will be a massive shock to any refugees or asylum seekers to find themselves after fleeing, after going through the traumatic, after taking the risk to get into a country where you think that you'll be safe, we think that you'll be protected, to send somewhere far away, which there is no safe place in that country. We have thousands and thousands of Rwandan, which are in exile, which they have fled Rwanda to go seek protection somewhere else. So let's say that, you know, now the Ukrainian fleeing Ukraine coming to the UK, the UK government going to ship them to Rwanda for the refugee cases to be processed in Rwanda. It's absolutely unthinkable.
All right, let's bring in our panel, all joining us from the UK. In London, Maya Goodfellow, an academic at the University of Sheffield and author of Hostile Environment, How Immigrants Became Scapegoats. In Nottingham, Natalie Hodgson, assistant professor in law at the University of Nottingham, who's done extensive research on Australia's refugee policies. And in Cambridge, Emily McDonnell, UK advocacy and communications coordinator at Human Rights Watch. A warm welcome to you all, and thanks so much for joining us today on the program. Emily, let me start with you today. The British government says that this new plan complies with international legal obligations that they have. What do you say? Is this new plan with Rwanda legal? And beyond that, would it actually deter migration by boat?
The agreement to relocate asylum seekers arriving irregularly to Rwanda is essentially the UK shirking its responsibilities under the Refugee Convention to people seeking asylum. It is very likely to be unlawful and basically represents the UK shifting and exporting their responsibility onto Rwanda. 6,000 kilometres out of sight and out of mind. And in terms of its effectiveness, we know from the Australia case that it wasn't effective. It was a failed offshore detention regime, which actually saw boat crossings increase when the policy was first implemented.
Natalie, you heard Emily there say that essentially it was a failed policy in Australia. I want to ask you about this because there are a lot of people that are comparing this Britain-Rwanda deal to the Australian offshore processing system. From the research that you have undertaken, did that actually work? Has it worked? And did the huge costs in the end justify the means?
Australia's offshore detention system has been severely criticised for being cruel, for being expensive, and for being ineffective at what it sought out to achieve. If we look at the conditions in offshore detention, we can see that throughout the duration of Australia's policy, asylum seekers experienced very high levels of mental distress. A report by the United Nations Refugee Agency in 2016 found that 89% of people on Manus Island and 83% of people on Nauru were suffering from a severe mental disorder, whether that was depression or anxiety or post-traumatic stress disorder. Now, Australia's policy was introduced to stop asylum seekers travelling to Australia by boat. Mm-hmm. However, Australia's policy began in 2012, and it wasn't until 2014 that boat arrivals to Australia began to decrease. So that's 2 years after the policy commenced. Even then, there were still asylum seekers travelling to Australia by boat in 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020. So the policy did not achieve what it sought out to do. And finally, Australia's policy was very expensive. For 3,127 asylum seekers to be housed offshore, it cost Australian taxpayers an average of $1 billion per year, and in some years, $1.5 billion.
Maya, how much has anti-migrant and anti-refugee sentiment grown in the UK in the last few years? And why is this happening now?
I think it's really important to think about how we got here. And I think there's the short-term and the longer-term picture, and we need to look at both of those things. So if we look at what's happened since the Conservatives have come into power, they've really honed in on anti-immigration and anti-asylum sentiment. So a very good example of this is during the height of the pandemic, Priti Patel, the British Home Secretary, was essentially whipping up hysteria about people crossing the channel. So whilst we were being told that our common humanity was all that really mattered in the context of a global health crisis, the government were dehumanising and also mistreating many of these people. And I think one of the things to say about this in relation to some of the previous things that have been said is that the aims are the wrong aims. One of the reasons that people are making these journeys, these very, very, very risky journeys, people know that they are going to be risking their lives when they make them, is that they have no other choice. And so it is because of government border policies that people are forced to get into boats in the first place. But there is also in Britain a longer term context that I think really matters here. So although Britain and many other countries had restrictive policies prior to the 1980s, my colleague Lucy Mablin has conducted work that shows that from the 1980s specifically, laws became more restrictive around asylum. And she argues that this is because it was people of colour who were increasingly coming to the UK to claim asylum. So these were not the refugees that the so-called West wanted. And so when we talk about restrictive immigration systems, I think we need to sort of unpick the way that these are mired in and created through racism. So the Conservatives are able to pursue these policies, and you know, the sort of blame lies that they're with them for these specific policies, but there is a much longer term context that has allowed these policies to even be a political possibility. And I think we have to grapple with that history as well as the present.
Emily, you were talking before about the similarities between what happened in Australia and what might happen in Britain, between this deal with Britain and Rwanda. But I want to ask you how concerned you are about the kind of precedent that this agreement might set. And I want to bring into this question the example. Last year, Denmark had passed legislation allowing it to relocate asylum seekers to third countries outside of the European Union while their cases are reviewed. Do you think that we're going to start seeing even more countries doing this now?
I think this is a very worrying concern. And in terms of what you're referring to, we've seen over the last few decades, many countries adopting what we would call externalization strategies and policies that sees various countries, predominantly in the global north, exporting their restrictive regimes to one another. So we saw Australia model its offshore detention regime off the US's Guantanamo Bay that used to house Haitian asylum seekers. Now we have Australia, and then we also saw it in discussions with Denmark, now the UK. So it is very concerning that when one country shows a complete disregard for its international legal obligations, such as Australia, that the UK is then following suit. And I think there is a real risk that as more countries seek to close their borders and shut down access to people fleeing war, persecution, that there is a real worry of a domino effect of others pushing ahead to close their borders.
Natalie, former colleagues of yours at the University of New South Wales had given testimony to UK's Parliament when it came to their experiences, their research about Australia's offshore processing system. What were some of those messages that were conveyed to British parliamentarians? And what would your message be right now to British MPs who are considering this proposal?
I think the research very clearly shows that offshore detention is a form of cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment. Research done by my colleagues, by NGOs, by UN agencies, has clearly pointed to significant deficiencies in Australia's system in terms of the accommodation that asylum seekers were housed in, the amount of medical treatment they could access, the significant delays it took for them to have their case processed and then for them to be resettled. The evidence clearly demonstrates that if the UK was to go down this path, not only would it be adopting an inhumane policy, but it would also be opening itself up to significant legal challenge. In relation to Australia, Australia's policy was challenged under constitutional law. There was a class action lawsuit brought against the Australian government, which was settled for $70 million, the largest ever human rights class action in Australia. And Australia was also referred to the International Criminal Court for its treatment of asylum seekers. If the UK was to go down this path, they would have to be prepared for resistance and to face some very serious court cases about whether or not they are able to implement this policy.
Maya, if this plan does go ahead, and if migrants and refugees are sent to Rwanda for processing, do we know at this stage if those who would be deemed refugees by Rwanda would actually be allowed to travel back to Britain?
So it's very difficult to make sense exactly what this policy is going to look like and how they're going to try to implement it. So part of the issue around all of this is that the British government is likes to talk very, very tough when it comes to asylum and immigration and make their plans sort of something that they can explain to the public quite easily, but then the details can be very, very difficult to make sense of. And one of the things that we know about Britain's asylum and immigration system already is that it is incredibly, incredibly complex. So I've spoken to many doing my research who have been so overwhelmed by the bureaucracy and the constantly changing laws. People really suffer both financially but also mentally because of the way the immigration system is constructed. And I think one of the things to say about all of this is that one of the big reasons that the government say that they're doing this is to try and reduce numbers and deter people from coming. But if we want to talk about numbers at all, what we know is that in 2018, it was estimated that 0.26% of the British population were refugees. 86% of the world's refugees are living in countries in the so-called developing world. But even when we are going to get into that, I actually don't think it's that helpful to talk about numbers, because as soon as you talk about numbers, it's always too much. And so the real key thing here, I think, to that can't really be said enough, is that the reason that people have to travel through so-called irregular routes is because borders make it so difficult to get here safely. It is the border policies of governments like the British government that mean that people have to take these routes that they are now saying makes them illegitimate if they're trying to claim asylum. So the logic is very contradictory, and I think it's very worrying if they're able to impact anyone at all with this policy. that is cause for serious concern.
Maya, from your perspective, what are the chances that this plan between Britain and Rwanda actually becomes law? And just how vulnerable do you think that it is to legal challenges?
I mean, there's going to be a lot of resistance to what the government are proposing. Already in the past 24 hours, we have seen sort of a large amount of opposition and criticism. And as was said at the beginning, whether this is even will be lawful under the Refugee Convention, it really remains to be seen what the detail is. So I think the government, what they really want to achieve with this, one of the things they really want to achieve with this, like many governments before them, is they want to talk tough and really show that they are tough. That does not mean that this cannot impact people and impact mm-hmm. people negatively. We can overlook the potential impacts of these policies. But the key thing here is that they are mobilizing xenophobia and racism, as they have been doing for mm-hmm. years, as many governments for them, and that is potentially going to have a devastating impact on people's lives, as it has done for decades in Britain.
Emily, Human Rights Watch has said that Rwanda has an appalling human rights record. Just how bad are things there when it comes to human rights?
Yeah, so Rwanda has a well-known track record of extrajudicial killings, deaths in custody, unlawful and arbitrary detention. And just last year, despite Boris Johnson calling it one of the safest countries in the world in his announcement, just last year, the UK denounced Rwanda's human rights record before the UN. So we know that refugees have faced abuse in Rwanda. In 2018, at least 12 refugees were shot dead by government forces when they were protesting their conditions and a cut to food rations. We also know that the government kidnaps Rwandan refugees outside the country and brings them back to face trial and ill treatment. And, you know, in terms of how can the UK government be sending asylum seekers to a place when the UK itself grants asylum to Rwandans who have fled the country because of that persecution and because of those human rights violations. In 2021, the UK government granted protection to 4 Rwandans.
Emily, let me also just follow up with you about something else. I mean, if this plan comes into effect, how much concern is there that this would essentially just increase the risks for refugees as they seek out other potentially more dangerous routes?
Thank you. Yeah, the only way to reduce deaths at sea, to reduce irregular, dangerous crossings by boat or in the back of lorries, is for the UK government to provide safe routes. As my fellow panellists have already said, there is a severe lack of safe routes in the UK for people to come here to seek asylum, reunify with their family. So an agreement like this, any strategy that is built on restrictiveness, on deterrence, will not work because people will take these desperate journeys. So we see that the schemes that the government has set up for Ukrainians, for Afghans, there are thousands of Ukrainians still waiting to reunify with their family to get here. Afghans who worked with the UK government, who are trapped still in Afghanistan, their family members are trapped and at risk. And we've seen them making the dangerous crossings across the channel because there are no safe routes.
Natalie, there's a lot of research out there, including some of your own research, that says that Australia's offshore scheme broke international law, that it was inhumane. As you said before, that it was hugely expensive. Has that swayed public opinion in Australia at all?
So I think as more information has emerged about the horrors of Australia's offshore detention system, we have seen public sentiment turn against this policy. In 2016, the government was proposing on returning a number of asylum seekers to offshore detention who had been brought to Australia for medical treatment. And that resulted in a fierce public outcry. There were protests outside hospitals where asylum seekers were being held. There were marches in all of the capital cities of Australia. And churches even proposed to offer sanctuary to asylum seekers to prevent them from being deported. And this ultimately resulted in the government backing down and allowing those asylum seekers to remain in Australia. Australia is currently going through a federal election campaign, mm-hmm. and there is a very distinct shift in the rhetoric used in 2013, in 2016, and mm-hmm. 2019 to what's being said today. The government is effectively silent on its border protection strategies. And what's more, it has been quietly releasing refugees who are held in detention centres to permit them to live in the community. So I think it's very clear that Australia's policy is not supported by the community. And I don't think the UK community would support a policy of sending refugees offshore to Rwanda either.
All right. Well, we have run out of time, so we're going to have to leave the conversation there. Thank you so much to all of our guests, Maya Goodfellow, Natalie Hodgson, and Emily McDonald. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. For me, Mohammed Jamjoum, and the whole team here in Doha, bye for now.